Oi, you. It's time for another episode of Dorothy and the Dealer. Let's tune into the conversation.
So welcome, Danielle.
Thank you.
It's so lovely to have you. I know you've met, we've met many years ago. Was it a few years ago?
2018, I believe.
2018, oh, okay. About 4 years ago, yeah. So it's nice to have you on. Yeah. Welcome. Just make sure you speak into the mic nice and closely because you've got such a quiet voice. You're not like me yelling and screaming all the time. So we're going to start off by singing a song.
Okay, I'm here.
No, well, our podcast, we normally start off by asking our guests what they...
What's your go-to song?
I feel like, okay.
Or a song that you love to listen to.
Oh, I'm like in between two right now. It's either Eye of the Tiger because, you know,
because
as an athlete,
Eye of the Tiger.
Yeah. Okay, let's do the Eye of the Tiger. I'm so dun 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 dun.
Very good. Rising up. Back on your feet or back on the street?
I don't know now.
I don't know.
Anyway, that is etched into the minds of our audience right now.
The other one is it's a new song called Fly Away by Tones and I. It's on the radio.
Oh,
but
yes, I know. You need to sing. Go on, sing it. Go on.
I know
which one it is,
now
but
I'm
I can't
having
recall.
A total mind blank and I can't even remember what the melody is. But I know.
Let's just go back to Eye of the Tiger.
Take that away.
Mitch is like, somebody's said a song from my era. Yeah. So
what are you talking about?
No, nothing. Nothing.
That's not my era. So, Danielle, it's great to have you on.
Thank you. It's lovely to be
man,
here.
Tell us about your life. Tell me what is happening? What has happened? Tell me the whole
journey.
I've
had a pretty... I'm turning 30 this year and I was thinking on everything I've done.
It all ends after 30, mate.
I'm thinking of all the things that I've done just in the past 10 years and it's pretty spectacular and I'm very, very, very grateful. But long story short, I mean, I am an Olympian. I have cries like out of gratitude once in a while because I still cannot believe that that is my reality. And just for terminology, it's like once you're an Olympian, you're always an Olympian. Some people say ex-Olympian, but it's like a doctor. You get that title for life, which is fun. But I'm not currently training anymore. So I went to the 2016 Rio Olympic Games for Australia as part of the synchronized swimming team. Wow. The name has changed now to artistic swimming.
Right.
But
why did they do that?
They were trying to make it like artistic gymnastics.
Right.
And so they're trying to be more in that. And then people say it's not like they're not synchronized the entire time. There's lots of different things that go on. Anyways, it's a bit of a controversial thing. A lot of people still call it synchronized swimming. But the funny thing is you probably can hear, you're like, why are you on the Australian team? I obviously don't sound Australian.
Yeah.
And so, you know.
You sound like you're from California.
I'm Mitch.
Hey. Canada, okay? I was born in Canada.
I'm only taking the piss. I love you, Americans.
But, you know, and I really say that, like, I was the person that was, like, you know how in the yearbook you get, like, most likely to? I was not most likely to become an Olympian. If anything, I was least likely to become an Olympian.
Right.
I was, you know, from a young age, I did the sport of synchronized swimming in Canada because my parents are from Sydney.
Right.
So that's how I have dual citizenship. I was born in Canada, but my parents were born in Australia, and they immigrated. And I did that sport and I loved it, but I was never good. I was like the great participant,
right?
Great attitude, wonderful teammate, not skilled.
Right. Really?
No, I would really like in our sport, we're actually ranked in something called figures. And so I was always at the bottom of the team.
Right.
And I just continued to participate because I loved it. And for me, it was about the passion and the joy that it brought me. But I struggled a lot when I was a teenager with my self-confidence, my self-belief. I mean, I was insecure in my body and then I was in this sport where you have to wear these tiny little bathing suits that are very tight.
Right.
And so it was kind of all of my greatest fears brought together. But I loved the sport so much that, you know, everything kind of overcame that. And I thought that I reached the pinnacle of my career. I got to go to nationals in Canada.
Right.
But again, I was the reserve. Like, I was the girl on the bench. But I was there for, you know, the had to have a great time. And, you know, I reached year 12 in Canada and I was like, that's it. Like, there's nowhere else I can go. I'm never going to make the Canadian national team. this was my peak. I've peaked. I'm done. Right. And I use the quotation marks. I retired. And life kind of had a different journey for me that led me in this incredible different direction.
So what happened next?
So I continued to...
You've got us hooked now.
I know. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. I'm in. Mate, this is a good pitch. I'm in.
I know.
Can I ask a quick question before we go there?
Yeah.
So it's an actual sport. Do a lot of kids do that in Canada? Like synchronized swimming? Because it's not something I've ever seen anybody do here.
It's bigger in Canada than it is in Australia, but it's still not that big. Like it's much bigger in places like Russia, China. It's a lot bigger. Spain, in the Ukraine, but it's just, it hasn't really reached its pinnacle in a lot of the other areas. Unfortunately, I think because the sport is so time consuming, we probably train more than any other sport. You know, when I was on the national team in Australia, you're training 6 hours a day in the water, 2 to 3, sometimes 4 hours on land, 6 days a week. So, you know, you have 8 to 10 hour training days, and you're doing that 6 days a week. Other sports don't do that. They'll have like short little sessions. So it is a really time consuming and a really technical sport. And it just doesn't have, I think, the traction that it should, because if you go on YouTube right now and go watch it, is phenomenal. And it's so entertaining and is so incredible. But I think that it needs, you know, one of my goals in life is to help kind of bring a little bit more awareness to the sport, because it is amazing.
Yeah.
And when anyone watches it, they're absolutely enthralled.
Mesmerized.
People just don't know about it. Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
Okay, so tell us.
Okay. So I retired in year 12, and I kept coaching. Like, I was a coach of teaching all the little kids, and I got involved in masters, which is basically like recreational. Like, you just stay involved to kind of like have a good time with your friends, but it wasn't anything, you know, serious. And I was in university at the time, and I was kind of on this path where I was like, I felt like I was pushed down this path. I think a lot of people are there. You feel like you have to go down this thing in life where, you know, you go to school, you go to university, but I wasn't passionate about what I was doing in university, and I was like, there's got to be something else in life. And I remember even writing down, like, a month before, you know, something happened, which I will share, you know, I'm bored with life. I just feel like I'm not in the right space. Like, I feel like I'm meant for something else. And so in 2013, in October, I was training one day at the pool, and I had university in the morning, and then the evening I was going to training. We were doing something called highlights. So highlights in synchronized swimming is when we basically build human pyramids and we egg beater up to the surface, and you can't ever touch the bottom or else you get a penalty. So we egg beater it up to the surface, and someone jumps and does a flip and then comes back down.
Wow.
And I was the person that they jump off of, and she went up and came straight back down on my head.
Right.
And we don't have, it's not like NFL, we don't have any protection, and, you know, a human falling on your head is a lot. And I got pulled out of the water. I felt kind of fine, but on the drive home that night, I felt really nauseous in my stomach, had a really bad headache, and I was studying for a midterm the next day, and I remember looking at the words on the paper, and I was like, I know that it's English, but I have no idea what it says.
Really?
Because my brain couldn't comprehend. Wow. I went to the doctor the next day, and I found out I had a concussion.
Right.
And it was one of those moments, I think we all have moments in all of our lives like this, right? You're just like, why is this happening to me? What did I do?
Yeah.
You know, it was before a lot of the work that I've done now, but we kind of think that the world is against us.
Yeah.
I ended up having to drop out of university. If you've ever had a bad concussion, you basically have to lay in a dark room for a month and not do anything. No screens, no activity, you know, like it's, you know.
Serious adversity.
Yeah, a lot of adversity. And I had my concussion over my 21st birthday. It was not how I thought my life was going to go. And then something happened the day after my 21st birthday. I was talking on the phone to my friend at the time. She was a past teammate of mine, and she was just wishing me happy birthday and everything. And then at the time when we were speaking, she got a message from the Australian national team coach, who happened to be a past coach of hers, because it's quite a small world when you get in small sports, and said, hey, is there any chance you'd want to come to Australia? She had dual citizenship as well.
Right.
Try out for the Australian team, because we're trying to build the team up to qualify for the 2016 Olympics. And as a friend, I think we do this as friends all the time. You're like, yeah, go for it. Like, how often do we believe in our friends? And then when the opportunity comes for ourselves, we're like, no, I'm good. And so I was cheering her on. I was like, you got to do this. And then she turns around, she says to me, she's like, Danielle, you could do it too. Like, you're a synchronized swimmer. You're Australian-Canadian. Like, you could go. And I was like, what? Like, are you joking me? Like, look at me. I'm concussed. Like, my life has fallen apart. I was never the best athlete. Like, who do you think that I am? Everyone would judge me. Everyone would laugh at me. There's no way. And I sat with that, And I really, it's one of those moments. Like, I understand people don't get that. Like, that doesn't come around twice in your life, right? And I realized, even though I was so scared of judgment, I was so scared of failure, I was so scared of what everyone would think of me because it was crazy, I was more scared of wondering what if and wondering who I could have been if I just had the courage to go after it. Mm-hmm. And I didn't want to have that regret in my life. And so even though it was so incredibly scary, I decided, I was like, I'm going to do this.
So do you think a big part of it was the fact, I mean, you've said it so many times, I loved the sport.
Yeah.
Do you think that that was a big pull? I mean,
yeah.
Having, and it's funny how, you know, there's a stages in our life where we don't see who we are and we measure ourselves off how other people see us. Mm. You know, we have a lot of loyalty to how other people see us. So it's quite magical when a buddy goes, no, you've actually got this and this and this. Mm. And you think, oh, yeah, but, you know, I'm concussed. I can't see myself. But do you think it was one of the big roles that your love for the sport played in it helped you make that choice and to go there? I mean, I suppose you'd nothing really to lose.
Yeah. I think it was the passion. And then as well, I think there was always, I believe this is in all of us. I think there's always something inside of us that's like, you can be greater.
Yeah.
And I felt that whisper and I really didn't want to not listen to it because I was more afraid of regret than I was afraid of failure. And so, you know, I was living with my parents at the time, and you can imagine, like, I was a few hours earlier crying.
How far into the concussion
This is about a month after my concussion. Yeah. Right. So I was, you know, crying, very sad, dropping out of university. And then later I come in and I'm like, so I'm going to go to the Olympics.
Really?
My parents are
She's
lovely.
Still concussed.
Yeah, they're lovely. But I'm like, anyone would be like, you're nuts. You're absolutely nuts. And I kind of had this thing inside me, stubbornness, determination, I don't know. But I was like, I'm just going to do it. I don't care if you support me or not, I'm going to do it.
Right.
And so I kind of kicked my recovery. And I think I actually had a drive because I felt like I was purposeless, right? Everything had been taken away from me, but now I had something to work towards. So I worked with the occupational therapist. I got better. Within 6 weeks, I was on a plane to Perth. Had never, ever been to Perth before for my first training camp. And there was I was one of 16 girls. I was 16th, the bottom of the team. Like, not good, again. But then I was like, my chances are 1 in 16, right?
Yeah, that's pretty good.
Right? That's better. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
And so within 6 months, I packed up my whole life. I didn't know anyone in Perth. I took out a student line of credit. I moved across the world by myself. And I said, you know, I'm not the most talented person, but I got a really great mindset.
Right.
And I believe in myself. And let's see how far that gets me.
Right.
Four years later, I made it on the team and I was number 4, out of the ranking instead of.
Wow. Yeah. That's really good. So how many people in the water at any one time?
There is, in a team routine, there's 8.
Right.
In the water. And then there's different types of routines that you can have 10 in the water. Right. And sometimes there's duets and solos and stuff.
Right.
But at the Olympics, there was 8 of us. Yeah.
Right. And so,
can I just ask about the process of getting there? So, I mean, you've skipped a couple of years.
Yeah,
there.
Of course.
So tell me about those years. Like, what happens? How does that? Obviously, you've got that. I think a very important part is having that purpose. I think people, when you don't have something to live for, then you're not, you know, you haven't got that inspiration, that drive. So having that obviously would have helped. But then once you were here and you were 16th, right, how do you push that? What do you do in that time?
Mm-hmm.
How do you get to that number 4 place?
Well, I really believe that part of it is I actually moved myself to the environment where not everyone on the team was in Perth, but it was the best place to be. We had a lot of support from the WA Institute of Sport. And so I put myself in the environment of people that were my teammates were better than me. And I was around coaches that could help me. And so I really believe that part of that was like I put myself in the environment where people had the right mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And then as well,
I like that.
We got the chance to work with like sports psychologists. And I was hearing from different sports psychologists about what everyone had done that had been successful in the past, right? Success leaves clues, right?
Yep.
And so, you know, one of our sports psychs said he had been to 10 Olympics as a sports psychologist.
Wow.
And he said every athlete that he had gotten to the Olympic Games did a few of these things. And I was like, well, give me
what are they?
Down. And he said they knew they had a purpose and intention when they went to training every day. They knew what they were trying to get out of the training, and they journaled and they reflected and held self-awareness on, you know, what they wanted to improve upon. And I was like, give it to me. Cool. I was like, journaling was like my full time job. And I have journals and journals. I've just been seeing them as I've gone back to Perth now. And of all, I built my muscle of self awareness. What am I doing good today? What am I not doing good? How can I improve? And I would just do that every single day. And between that and, you know, working with actual sports psychologists and being in the right environment and just having such a fire inside of me, I truly believe that's, and like having a good attitude no matter what. Like, I'm not one, I was never one to complain. I don't really believe in complaining. Like, I really believe that it wasn't my skill. I believe it was my mind that got me to the games.
Yeah. Wow, that's awesome. And sorry, Melissa.
Go.
So there's a process of that. So one of them was journaling. What am I doing good today? What am I not doing good today? And how can I improve?
Yeah.
Great. And did they give you more?
They didn't give us a lot of guidance into like how to do the journaling process. That's something that I, you know, went through myself. And really coming from the spectacle, especially being an athlete, I had to really separate who I was as an athlete, who I was as a person. If I get feedback, it doesn't mean I'm a bad person. I think that we can all do this. Like, you get constructive criticism, whether it's at work or it's friends, and we take it personally. Mm. And I really had to come from this perspective. It's like, no, I'm just going to separate. This is me, Danielle, as an athlete. Danielle is a person, is a good person, the coach likes her, but I want to improve. And so really, I think sometimes when we receive constructive criticism, we can spend so much time beating ourselves up instead of being like, okay, cool, like how can I just use this to improve myself and just not spend any mental energy beating myself up for what was, which can be hard sometimes, of course, and then just always focus on what can I do better, what can I do better, what can I do better.
I was watching the Olympics, I think it was the 2021 that got moved to 21.
Yeah.
And they were doing the high jump, and there was one of the girls that after every jump she sat with a journal before she did anything else.
Oh, that's great.
She sat with a journal and must have been like, I don't know, because writing how she felt or writing whatever.
A lot of people journal, but they don't know how to journal.
And I think
they think they're just writing, and sometimes they can be just writing and just downing on themselves and slamming themselves and smashing themselves, and that's not what it's about. You have to be, like you said, you know, the archetype is I'm a synchronized swimmer. The person is not the archetype. The archetype is something we slip into when we slip into our togs or into our speedo to get into the water. That's when we become that archetype. When you're out of that archetype, you know, the person, the self, should be assessing fairly, because if you're going to beat yourself up, you may as well beat yourself down. If you do both, you're going to love yourself. So the person being able to, you know, actually love on the archetype is what helps them. It's like a child. You got to nurture that child, that part of yourself, to be able to be excellent at what they do, you know? Which I just think,
and I love the intentional as well. I think being intentional makes such a difference, knowing what your purpose is and being intentional with your journaling, being intentional with the sport, with it,
yeah,
with it
and
all,
just,
you know,
going to training sessions. I think that was really big. You know, you can kind of get in this when you have a coach. That was something so interesting when I retired, because I had lived basically 18 years of my life where I showed up and someone told me what to do all the time. And so then you're like, oh, I have to do this myself. But actually being an active athlete or being like, this is what I want to get out of this session, and this is what I want to improve. And I think intention is just such a powerful force that helps us kind of bring our goals into fruition. And, you know, to keep in mind too, like, I would sometimes have the same intention for a training session for like 3 months, and like, because it takes time to improve, right? I think it's not just like, cool, done, like, move on. It was always like, it would take me a lot of time to improve upon things.
But I think that's, you know, that's the dedication thing. You know, there's a great Bruce Lee statement where he says, don't do 10,000 things, do one thing 10,000 times and just become a master at it, you know? And I was with an SAS soldier the other day, and he's just about to do relationships in you with us, and he sat down with me and he said to me that he was, sorry, I'm just moving away from the mic, it's okay, team, I've got it back. So he was he was saying to me that his biggest concern was that it was going to take his edge away. And I said to him, no, the edge is always there. What it's going to do is it's going to give you a better understanding of the soldier, you know, the part of you that, you know, is going on a mission, because they send them on jobs, or what they call jobs, all the time. And when personal development and self-improvement is about working yourself into being excellent at whatever it is you actually do, you know, and to understand yourself, you know, and I think there's a great analogy we use here where, you know, when you look at a computer screen, you see what's going on at a computer screen. And, but if you know that if you peel that computer screen back, there's nobody behind it. In fact, what's behind it is actually really technical. So learning all the technicality of how you operate and how you work takes practice, takes time, but that's how you master things, you know, by just continuing the hours. And sure, you got the critic inside of yourself. The critic's job is to make you excellent. We think the critic's job is to beat us up, but it's not. The critic's job is to make us excellent at what we do, and is designed there to be able to show us that whatever we need is around us, and we can pick it up at any moment in time and, you know, put it into any archetype, into any characteristic or trait to grow us, you know.
Danielle, I don't know if you've read any of Stephen Kotler's work, Stealing Fire. Have you heard of that? He talks about flow and states of flow, you know, when you're, especially when you're, you know, Mitch loves to ride bikes down mountains, you know, when you're in that place where you're in that place of flow. How did that work with a team, you know, in the water? Did it take time for you guys to get together? But obviously to get to the Olympics, you obviously need to be able to work together and be in unison.
Yeah, that's a really great question. I haven't been asked that in a long time. But there's definitely a flow that you hit, as it's so interesting being in a team, right? Because everyone's at different mental spaces and levels and everything. And there's only so much you can control other people, right? I think being in a team is one of my greatest learnings, because you spend 8 hours a day with these people, but like in such a, like, we have to be physically close. So imagine being around your employees all within like half a meter of you all day long. Like, it's very, could be very triggering. It was a really great tool in learning other people. But I found as a team, when we really hit our flow, and it's with myself, it's when you come into presence. When you come into the present moment, which can, it's so, as a human and as an athlete, there's so many things to think about in a routine. So in a routine, we have hundreds of counts. We have countless different patterns. We're right side up, we're upside down. You have to focus on moving your arms and your legs at the same time while pointing your toes. And when you're upside, you're right side up, you have to be smiling or pretending that it's not hard when you're really actually dying inside. And so to come back to the present moment, and then if you made a mistake as well, then you tried to not beat yourself up for the mistake that you made, because if you do that, then you continue to make mistakes. Right. So as a team, we would have moments where we could feel that presence, and it would make things like our highlights. You know, it was really cool at the Olympics. We really found this flow for one of our first highlights, which was really phenomenal. And even the Russian and the Chinese team, who were like the top of the world, they would look over at us and be like, whoa, like that was good. Like, what did you guys do? Mm-hmm. But it was kind of finding this synchronization and this presence within ourselves and in the team.
That sounds like, it would have been. But it sounds so cool. So, like, I never understood, so this is just basic synchronized swimming stuff.
That's
now
totally
talk to me about how you actually do it and how you actually breathe underwater.
Okay.
I don't think they breathe underwater.
No, well, I know, but how do they hold their breath? I can't even swim
to breathe underwater. That would be amazing.
That's true. Okay.
This is gonna challenge my intellect, explaining it without, like, on a podcast,
sure,
without being able to show when you are upside down, you have one or two legs in the air, you basically do a movement. Imagine if you're holding plates and your arms go in and out. And so that's called sculling. And that creates a friction where you move the water to be able to project yourself upwards.
Right.
Just like any propeller, right?
Right,
and so
right.
your hands become propellers.
Right.
And so when you're upside down, you do that kind of in the motion. I'm showing you guys, but obviously people listening can't see it. Where your hands are moving side to side like plates, and you push yourself up.
Right.
And so the goal is, if you have one leg up, you always want to have your butt out of the water. I mean, at the Olympic level, which is, if you know,
it's
go
difficult.
In a pool and just give that a try and get one leg out of the water, and it has to be pointed and straight.
Wow.
And then if you have two legs up, you want to be like mid thigh out of the water. It's obviously more challenging having two legs up. And then that's a very basic position. So then you have different movements. So you're moving your legs in different ways and different angles, vertical, horizontal at different times. You're pointing your toes. And then you have to remember that you're in a pattern. pattern. So you can like make a diamond or a square, or you can have 2, 2, 2, 2, because it's always eight makes lots of different patterns. Yep. And you have to move as well. So you move, you change patterns while you're doing figures.
Wow.
And you're upside down and you're holding your breath.
Oh my God.
And you're counting to the music.
I'm panicking at the fact that we're still holding our breath.
That's only like 10 seconds of the routine. Oh so God. Then you have to come up and then you breathe and you smile and you do different movements and then you change your pattern and then you go under again. So in our sport, we're not, you're never under the water for like more than, you know, 45 seconds.
Right.
Like that would be because your heart rate is going 180 beats per minute, right? Like, but if you're under the water for 15 seconds and your heart is going 180 beats per minute, 10 seconds, 15 seconds feels like an eternity.
A long time.
So it is, I think, one of the gifts that synchronized swimming has given me. It's a lot of, I've heard this from sports psychologists in the past, it's a lot of right and left brain because you have to be very technical, but you also have to be very creative.
Right.
So it's this really cool balance. And then you have to have, you know, I think that that's what has led me so beautifully into the work that I do now. Like, I feel like I, between my own level of being able to improve myself to get on the team by not being talented and just the mindset that comes from being a synchronized swimmer, I feel like I have this really great edge to actually know what it truly takes to build a resilient, unshakable mindset.
Right, right, right. Wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
That's insane. Like, I can't even breathe swimming because I get the water in my mouth and I just don't get it.
Yeah.
So I think that's so amazing because like having all of that stuff happen and then still not being able to breathe and still having to make sure you're in formation and stuff is just kind of mind blowing. I've always thought that about synchronized swimmers.
Oh,
I mean, I think you watch them and they have to be very talented to be able to do that.
Mm. Yeah. And I mean, you think about like other types of sports that you see at the Olympics, you know, swimming is huge in Australia, which is amazing too, but they have four strokes and they do the same action over and over and over again. We do hundreds of movements in a routine. Mm. And so it's just such a different type of, you know, even rowing, they do the same movement over and over, but that's about speed. And so it's a very technical and like there's a lot of mind that you can't turn off your brain if you're swimming, where I feel like if you're kind of you know, rowing or stuff, you kind of go into the zone because you're just done the same motion over and over again. You have to be very active as a synchronized swimmer.
So you're on the team.
Yeah.
You're working your way up. You're pushing your mindset, you're pushing your skill set, all of this stuff. How do you find out that you're in the Olympics? Like, what happens and how does that feel?
Yeah. So the process is, how it works is there's a world championships every 2 years. It's called FINA World Championships. So it's like an aquatics. It's actually going on very soon in June 2022. They'll televise the swimming, but they won't televise the other sports, which is a bit heartbreaking. And so at that World Championships, the year before the Olympics, you as a nation have to qualify for your continent. So in the Olympic world, there's five continents. I know there's not five, but they have North and South America together, Europe, Africa, Asia, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
And so the way that Australia has the opportunity to get into the Olympic Games is we have less people to compete against,
right,
as opposed to Europe, right?
Right, right.
So in 2015, we were in Russia, and we had to beat New Zealand to get on the team, the country into the Olympics. And so the thing that I didn't realize until I was in this world is you can qualify your country, and I swam in the routine where we beat New Zealand, but I didn't mean that I was on the team.
Right.
So Australia is going to the Olympics, Danielle, not yet. And so in April 2016, we have Olympic team trials. They bring judges in from around the world, and you go through this very intense trial process individually, and then you're individually selected out of however many are trialing, and they take 9.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then, so what happens then?
And then what happens?
How do you find out?
Oh,
was there a party? Were you like...
So it was... It was a really beautiful kind of, I mean, obviously a mentally challenging process because I was on this journey, right, where I moved to Australia and everyone's like, you know, go you, like you go to the Olympics. My family's like, yeah. I feel like everyone was like, there's no way she's doing this. And then I started getting better and better and I was making on the team and then everyone's like, oh, damn, like she's going to go.
Wow.
And it was this kind of interesting thing, right, because I wasn't on the team yet, but my family was booking tickets to the Olympic Games. Because,
really? They were like, nah, she's got this.
Well, because, you know, that. Like I only qualified 4 months before the Games, but to be able to get tickets to the Olympics, you got to buy them way in advance, right?
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, right.
So everyone was like, "You got this! I believe in you. You're gonna be on the team." And I was like, angry at people because I was like, "You don't have to do the hard yards. Like, I'm the one who has to swim every day. All you got to do is cheer me on." And I had this moment where I was like, I had sacrificed so much to get there, right? Like, I had moved across the world, taken out a student line of credit. Like, as synchronized swimmers, we're not paid, so I was in debt. Like, everything. Like, I was all chips.
So much pressure, yeah.
And I was like, what if I have done all of this and I don't make the team? Like, it's all for nothing.
Mm.
And I had this moment where I realized, you know, my own little epiphany. It was never about making the Olympic team. It was about proving to myself that I was good enough.
Ooh.
It was about proving to myself that I was worthy. And as long as I felt good enough and worthy, and it was about the person that I became, getting the Olympics would only be the cherry on top.
Wow.
And I feel like it was kind of this moment of like, you know, universal moment of kind of like manifestation too, because I let go of the outcome. I was like, you know what? I'm so proud of who I am and I'm so proud of how far I've come and I'm going to go and give it everything, but I'm not going to let the outcome determine my worth.
Mm-hmm.
And in doing really that, yeah, I've had like some of the best swims that I've had in the Olympic team trials. And the way that it works, at least for this round, it's different every round depending on where the teams are. And we were at home and they say to you, okay, at 9 o'clock, we're going to start calling the people that have made the Olympic team. And you get to choose, you know, your environment. So I was with my partner at the time and, you know, they say, we're going to call the people that don't make the team first.
Right.
And so you're like, don't call at 9 a.m. I like do not. So in my mind, I'm like, okay, so how long does like one call take? So I was like by 9:10. Like I just want to make sure no one calls me before 9:10. And so I'm pacing the room, like haven't slept the night before. Like I've like physically feel nauseous. Yeah. And then my phone, I was like 9:09 and it starts ringing. I was like, no, please don't. This is too early. Like I can't. And then I pick it up because I obviously have to. It's the president of Synchro Australia. And he just says, hi, Danielle. Of course, you're going to the Olympics. And I just started like bawling my eyes out because like, you kind of have this movie moment montage. You're like thinking of all the moments of all the things that I've done, everything that I've been through, every single challenge, you know, like there's so many times like I was so broke too. Like I was working at the garden and I'd work till 1 a.m. I didn't have a car. I'd go sleep for 4 hours. I'd walk to training for 5 hours. Like there would be moments where I'd be so physically exhausted, so mentally exhausted. And I just went all in. And then you're like, you're going to the Olympics.
Wow.
And you're like, it just, I still feel like, I mean, that's why my book is called The Unlikely Olympian. Yeah. I'm not the person that was supposed to go, right? I feel like that was not my journey. And I feel like sometimes we see these Olympians, which is amazing. And they're always the MVP. They're always the most talented. But I truly believe like there's an unlikely Olympian in every single one of us, you know? And I think that it really takes that level of like, how can you build up your mindset and your self-belief to really back yourself on your dreams and your desires and your goals. And that's really helped me in everything that I've gotten to do now. And, you know, after making the team, we had this kind of whirlwind of, we flew to Japan for a competition. Mrs. Reinhardt, you know, Gina Reinhardt is a big fan of synchronized swimming. So we had some incredible experiences with her. I got to go on a private jet, be flown to Uluru.
Wow.
We flew to the Canary Islands. We did private events for Mrs. Reinhardt. We were at the AIS. We got flown to Brazil. And it was just kind of this like crazy 6 months of whirlwind of like, how is this my life?
Yeah. That's so
and then I ended up at the Olympics and I got to walk in at the opening ceremonies.
That would have been amazing. Was that amazing? God.
It was it was the most amazing experience for me because as an athlete, I realized this when I made the team. I was like, oh, like, I'm not there to enjoy the Olympics. I'm there to do a job, right? Yeah. Like I'm there to, you know, it's not about me having a good time. I'm there to represent Australia and I'm there to do my best. But a lot of athletes don't actually get to walk in the opening ceremonies because it's quite a tiring experience. So when you see countries walking out, a lot of times it's a lot of physios and doctors and staff and stuff. And so we actually got to walk because our competition date was like 2 weeks after the actual opening ceremony. And it was one of those days where I have always been an Olympic lover. Like I'm the girl that knows when the opening ceremonies are on. I sit down, I watch, I cry my eyes out because I'm like, just have all done so well. And so realizing that I was walking in the opening ceremonies was, I was so excited. You know, they line, you have to wear this special outfit. They tell you how to tie your scarf right. and everything. And they, in Rio, they had all these buses and that had all of the Olympians being channeled to the stadium. They stopped the traffic. And then you walk into the stadium, you know, in alphabetical order. So obviously Australia is right at the beginning. And so we're wrapping around the stadium and all the Aussies are standing there. And me and my teammates are like, we're going to get on TV. Like that was our goal.
Yeah.
And the first line of athletes after the flag bearer, they choose. And then after that, you can be whoever. And we're walking, you know, you can feel the energy. There's 100,000 people in the stadium and the ceremony's going on, right? So you can feel it. It's then there's, you know, all these dancers and everyone walking out and you start to go into this. It's like this dark tunnel and you see the light at the end. The light means you walked into the stadium. And then I was holding my teammate's hand and, you know, in this whole process, I had so much imposter syndrome being someone with a Canadian accent,
right.
but Australian family being on the Australian team. And so I had so much, like living in Australia, have had so much love. You know, my whole family's Aussie. I was just born in Canada and I sound like this.
Right.
But I had so much love that developed for being an Australian. So we walked into this dark tunnel. I'm holding my teammate's hand. And then the whole team starts going, Aussie, 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 oi, 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 Aussie, oi, Aussie, oi, and just over and over and over again. And I'm just crying my eyes out because it was one of those moments, like the beautiful metaphor of like the darkness, everything that you walk through. And then when, like you go through everything where you think that you're going to give up. You just don't think that it's possible. And I really feel like I was holding my teammate's hand. I put my phone down to just take in the moment. I walked into the light of that stadium. I was like, I did it.
Holy moly.
How the heck is this my life? How did I do this? But I did it. And I believed in myself. And I just, all those moments, you know, the little girl inside of me who never believed that she was good enough, that never believed that she was worthy, that never believed that she could do anything and like is here. And if I can do that, like, just imagine what we can all do.
Yeah.
That's what I truly believe.
Yeah. You know, I think it's so important. So many people talk to us about imposter syndrome, and everybody has that in some way. You come across as bubbly and inspiring and all of that, but obviously you've had those moments where you're feeling like an imposter. You have your down days. How do you deal with those? What's your way of being able to handle those situations?
I think now it's quite a lot different than what it was back then. It really got me down. You know, I'd have people comment on, you know, my accent. My teammates would tell me to not talk because they didn't want me to sound, you know, and like, I'm Canadian, so not have a. I've always wanted an Australian accent, but it just hasn't happened yet. And so they would tell me to not talk on interviews. People would make comments, and it really made me feel super, you know, insecure, and it was quite hard working through that process. But I think really what's helped me now in it is just, and even then, it's like really coming back to like who you got to know who you are. And know, you know, at the core of it, I was like, I know that I'm a good person. I know that I'm an integral human being. And that's where I really had to find my own worth. And I know that I've worked in my mind and in my life to get here. And ultimately, I have to let go of what anyone else thinks of me, because usually that's just a projection of their own self-belief.
Yeah.
And really coming back to knowing who I am has helped me. And I think sometimes imposter syndrome is a gift too, because I think it keeps you humble. I think you're not too up in your head. Yeah. Like, I'm not better than anyone else. I'm just an average person. So there's kind of that polarity in that, but knowing who I am has been a big help for that.
And so now that you've gone through the stadium and you've got to get to, do you have to have heats and stuff, or do you have to go through the heats?
So a bit different. We have in at the Olympic Games for synchro, you have two routines. You have a technical routine and a free routine. So if you've ever watched like figure skating, they have a routine where they basically, there's all of these the elements that you have to do. So it's like a movement that everyone has to do in the routine. So all those routines look quite similar. So that was on one day. And then the other day it's a free routine. So you basically do, it's absolute creative freedom. And so we didn't have any heats. We had already basically made it. And it's kind of like, that's the finals.
Right.
So it's very different than other sports like swimming and stuff like that. So I got to compete on 2 days. I was in both of the routines. And that was like, phenomenal experience in and of itself. We were in the pool back in Rio. There was like that whole green pool saga. So we were like in that with the other divers. And just the whole mindset of it all, like the opening ceremonies was amazing because I got to feel it all. But the actual competing was, it was amazing, but it was like a job, you mm-hmm. know, mm. like you can't take it all working, in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I have to, I'm there for business. But with the, when I swam the second time, it was a really cool moment because then that was like, okay, I can kind of let myself take it all in now. And yeah. I can let myself, you know, really feel it. And, you know, our routines are a 3 minute and a 4 minute routine and 7 minutes of your entire life. You think of someone like Usain Bolt, right? He races for 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And honestly, it goes by like that. Like you yeah. can't even basically remember because you're so in the present moment that it's just gone. And so walking up on the stage afterwards, it was like one of those beautiful, I know it's so cliche, but it was like, it was never about that moment. It was about the journey, right? Because if you took away those 7 minutes of my life, I would still be the same person I am today. But if you only gave me the 7 minutes of actually competing at the Olympics and I never got that journey, I'd be totally different.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, and that moment was so fleeting that it wasn't the Olympics that made me who I was. Mm. It was the journey of getting to the Olympics.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the Olympics really is the pinnacle, the top of the mountain. You know, I've always said that when you climb a mountain, you know, you don't get up to the top to acknowledge what you see, you also get up to the top to you don't get up to acknowledge what you see, you get up to the top to look back on how much mm. you've achieved and who helped you get there. So if I was to ask you the question, who was, everybody has a master that they meet in their lives at some stage. It's part of the hero's journey, you know. Mm. Somebody comes along when you think, and then somebody just believes in you a little bit more than you, you know, sees a little bit more than you can see. And then either, you know, it can come in the form of many people or it can come in the form of one. Mm. Who do you think your master was, if you were to pinpoint it?
In that portion of the journey, I would say I had two sports psychologists that were really pinnacle. One of them, he had been to 10 Olympics, like I said, as a sports psychologist and worked with, he had said he had over 100 Olympic medals under his belt. And so he was definitely one that helped me in that mindset. That was more, worked with the entire team. And then I had my personal sports psych from Waste. His name was Matt Bergen. And he was the one that sat with me in those days where, you know, you just feel like, who am I? Why am I doing this? I don't know
yeah.
how to keep going. And he was the one that said to me, and I'm like, this guy has been on all these Olympic cycles. He sat from countless Olympians, across from a countless Olympians. And he said to me, he's like, your journey would be a really incredible book. And that was the reason why I ended up writing a book. But I really felt like they saw me and they believed in me.
Yeah.
And I truly don't think that I would be able to be an Olympian without their help.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I'm very grateful to them.
You know, it's funny. They present themselves no matter what in a person's life. You know, mm-hmm. they always show up. And one of the things I always say to people is keep your eye out because sometimes you can miss them, you know, mm-hmm. and they don't always come in the form that you want them to. You know, they can come in the form of an asshole coach who just drills you and, you know, pushes you and yeah. just tries to break you. But eventually what breaks out of that is something extraordinary, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what was it like then? So because I want to talk about the book, get to that place. But once you'd finished it, once you were done, what changed? What happened?
Yeah. They think there's nothing else in life where so we competed on the 18th and 19th of August 2016. I actually didn't. I never thought of life after the 19th of August. Like, life didn't exist for me because that's all you can focus on.
Not even the party, Danielle. Not even the party.
Oh,
Maybe the party. That was on the 20th.
But, like, yeah, that was on the 19th, 20th. But, like, other than that, because, you know, even in the lead up to the Olympics, like, you have to do things with your family that say, if a family member was to die
yeah.
when I'm at the Olympics, what are you going to do? Like, and you have to talk to your family members and be like, don't tell me. Because, you know, so you have to think
yeah.
about these really
crazy
extreme
stuff,
circumstances.
Yeah.
And got to the 19th and I was like, oh, my God, time keeps going.
Did anybody die? Yeah.
Is everybody okay?
And then I realized that life kept moving on. And, you know, after the celebrations and coming back, and that was all really exciting. You come back and after a couple of weeks, no one cares. the Olympics is over, it's not on TV anymore, and you feel like you just had the most life-changing experience, and we came back. I had was totally broke. I borrowed $300 from my dad, had no job, had no money, basically, had no way of bringing in income, and all of a sudden I was kind of a nobody again. And I literally ended up nannying the next month. I got a job at a restaurant, like I was working in Leaderville, and I remember people would see my tattoo on my ankle that
I've got it written here. Where's the tattoo?
It's on my
ankle. Yeah, I saw it earlier. Yeah.
And I had a tattoo on my ankle, and people would be like, oh, did you compete at the Olympics? I was like, yeah, I was there last month. I get good tips, which is a great thing. But it was so humbling, right? Because you were literally like a hero, and then you're kind of nobody again. Yeah. And so that was a really, like, you know, another kind of dark night of the soul experience. And then because I'd never thought of my life after then, well, now what do I want to do? And so I kept swimming for a few more years, which was just such a gift as
well. Was it ever a goal to go back, or was it just to go the first time?
Well, I was like, I just made it to one. So I'm like, stoked to be at one. But then you get to the Olympics. It's quite funny in the village. Because you go to the Olympic Games and you're like, okay, I feel pretty good. I like, you know, my morale is pretty high. And then you get into the Olympics, you're one of 10,000 Olympians.
Yeah.
You're just normal again.
Then
there's this other hierarchy of like, oh, you've only been to one Olympic Games? Like, I've been to three.
Really?
Yeah. And so I was literally thinking about going to Tokyo for like 4 years. And I just couldn't decide. And in 2019, I was trialing for the Olympic team in Tokyo because I was like, you know, this would be amazing to go to another one. And I just couldn't not listen to this pull inside of me that was like, there's something more in you. Mm-hmm. There's being an athlete is one of the most incredible experiences in my life, but it's also a very selfish pursuit. Everything is about you, right? Your food, your life, your sleep, like it's all focused because you have to do that to be your best. And I've always been such a person that wants to give and love and help. And so I just was like, there finally was kind of this call inside of me after months and months and soul searching of like, nope, it's time to move on. And so I ended up kind of my swan song in the team was I got to be Australia's first mixed duet. So that's a male and female synchronized swimmer. I competed at the 2019 World Championships in South Korea. Cool. And that was my final performance. And then I
polished, and you knew it was going
to
be.
I knew it was my final one. And then I was like, cool, time to go jump on the next dream of sharing my book and my story with the world. Because I said this, I was like on my way before I knew I was made it to the games. I kind of made this vow. I say with the universe, I was like, if I'm able to do this, because this is bollocks. This is insane.
Yeah.
This is bigger than me. I got to share. I got to talk. I got to show people what's possible. And so I made this vow. It's like, I'm going to share my story and show people how possible, you know, their life is and their dreams are if they have the right tools. So I kind of set off on that next journey. And it was quite a gift because we all know what happened in 2020. And the girls had quite a challenging experience. And it wasn't quite the Olympics I think everyone was hoping for.
Yeah,
so I'm quite glad that I left when I did.
So now you've written your book. So the book is The Unlikely Olympian.
Yes.
And so is it about inspiration? Is it about, like you said, you're coaching as well?
So it's about kind of the journey of a bit of my life. And I go a lot more into, there was so much crazy stuff. It's like, could have been a reality show. Everything that happened in the lead up to actually making on the Olympic team. I had some stuff go down with some friends and it was quite a fascinating story, which I haven't shared because it's all in the book and it's very interesting. And then also kind of the lessons that I learned in that process and how I share that with other people of, you know, the working through our own limiting beliefs and finding out what we love and understanding that adversity is a part of the process. I think that people forget that sometimes in life. There's always going to be challenges.
Of course.
And then coming back to like having deep gratitude for the life that you are given. So it's kind of my journey and a little lessons that I learned on the way.
So has it got tips? Has it got
It's got tips,
processes to follow.
Yeah, exactly. Great. Yeah, okay. And with my story in there. Yeah.
Who do you reckon is most touched by your story and most impacted by your story? Do you think young girls?
Yeah, I get a lot of women, but also men sometimes, and I find that it's really that person that they've always felt like there's something bigger inside of them, but they've struggled with their own self-worth and belief and mindset. And like I said, I truly believe that there is an unlikely Olympian in every one of us, whether that means that you know, achieve the dream or the desire that you've always wanted to in some way, shape or form. So really kind of like that underdog type of person is.
So what's your next Olympics? What's next?
My next Olympics. Well, my long-term goal, I actually haven't shared this, but I would love, I'm putting it out there in the next 10 years, I'd love to have a movie made of this story.
Right.
Not for my own glory, but first of all, to share more about, you hear all these football movies and stuff, and I was like, let's have a female in the movie, right?
Yes. Yeah.
And a synchronized swimmer. But also kind of to share, I feel like it shows more so what is possible for the average person,
right,
as opposed to someone who's just kind of special. I would love that. But really now I work just online and building my own business and helping women around mindset and self-belief and self-worth and building that up. You know, as I have been over the last few years.
Are you based in Perth now?
I'm kind of a nomad of the world.
Yeah.
I have been in Canada for the past few years. I've come back to Perth for a couple months and planning my wedding here and then going back to Canada and then doing some traveling and, you know, before I settle down and having kids in the coming years. So.
Yeah. And where are you thinking of settling? Canada?
I hope my mom doesn't listen to this. I love Australia.
Right.
I love it.
Australia's pretty good.
Yeah, it's great.
The weather is so much better here.
Yeah.
And my fiancé is Australian as well. Right. I have dual citizenship. So, it's yet to be decided.
Yeah. I think you've already decided to. you better not play this to your mom.
Yeah.
And we met you a few years back now. You came to one of our Mastermind of Moneys, didn't you?
I think relationship thing, seminar.
Oh,
were you in relationships?
Did you do relationships in you?
I did one of your free seminars.
Oh, right.
No, that would have been a relationship seminar.
Yeah.
I remember, because I heard you speak at, it was like a love lab, actually.
Oh, yes.
You spoke at one of those, and I was like, who's this lady? I like her.
Yeah.
And then you're talking about MJB, and then I was looking you guys up, and I remember I came to one of your seminars, and I found my journal the other day. I was just showing Mitch of the notes that I was taking. And I remember I was hearing you guys speak, because I love speaking as well, and I was like, I want to do what they do.
Mm-hmm.
Like 4 years later, I'm
here.
Presto.
So, Danielle, how can people find you? To share how we can...
If you want to get my book, it is available on Amazon. It's called The Unlikely Olympian. And you can follow me on social media on Instagram at DanielleKettlewell_. I'm also on TikTok as well. I've gone down that avenue. And then my website...
How's that going for you? Enjoying TikTok?
TikTok is a different beast, but it's fun. It's an incredible way to meet new people. Actually, I would say 95% of my clients come from TikTok.
Wow.
That's
insane. Yeah.
That's bonkers. Awesome.
And what we wanted to do as well for people listening is to offer some tickets as well, some discounted tickets for our Mastermind of Money event to your people as well, because anyone in Perth, we've got our live event teaching all about mindset, all about money. So
perfect.
We're going to hand those over to you guys as well so that you can share with your
amazing.
Okay. Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. So really cool. So just to finish up.
Yeah.
What do you think is the one thing you're the most grateful for, Danielle? With all of this process.
Yeah. With, that's a really big question. But, I think for me, I find that gratitude feels really the most expansive when it's the most granular. Because I think, I'm so grateful for my friends and my family, but I'm just grateful to be here and to be alive. And I have a mind and I have a body and I'm healthy. And I think that sometimes we take that for granted.
Yeah.
You know, I can walk, I can talk, I can do things that a lot of people, I have a client that's paraplegic, so there's people that don't have the privileges that we have. And that I'm a healthy, alive human being. Like there's a 1 in 400 trillion chance that each of us are here, but I don't think that we live our lives as though we are a miracle. So I do my best to do that.
Good work.
Oh, I love that.
I love it.
I've had an amazing time this chat. That was
Me
really
too.
Awesome.
This is great.
That
I
was
really enjoyed
really
it.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thanks
been lovely.
Thanks for joining us.
Letting us in on that.
Yeah.
It was great. Even if you live the most extraordinary life, there is always more to learn. This is why tens of thousands of people are using MJB Seminars techniques to hack their consciousness and bridge the gap from where they are to where they actually want to be.
MJB seminars use cutting-edge transformational processes that are science-based and backed to help people break through subconscious barriers and limiting beliefs in order to reset, reboot, and live inspired. If you'd like to know more today, Google search MJB Seminars Bridge the Gap. Click on the first link and watch the video.
Now, for simply watching the video, you will also receive a complimentary coaching session with one of our master coaches valued at over $600 to help you get traction in your life today. Remember, live life inspired.